Yeah, with the ball. Jesus Hashem will get back to Chaim Salvo'lis just to prove that I didn't forget that that's the official heading of the shiur. So we're actually headed toward the end, and the truth is that Shaar HaBitachon very much ties into much of what we've been discussing now. We're going to start the last perek of Shaar HaBitachon, perek Shvi. I'm going to skip the sixth perek. For our purposes.
That's page 464 and save on the
464
Feldheim.
in the English, in the Feldheim English. Shikoyach. Okay. I'll just speak out briefly what he says in the sixth parak. We won't spend much time on it. We'll move on. The sixth parak is basically just a discussion on the mindset of, he calls it Bali Mashkoin. It's the people, he wants you to let go of material concerns to the extent that you're able to put the proper efforts into getting yourself further in Avodas Hashem, meaning not dropping your business, but not to wait. So before I could really start putting efforts into my relationship with Hashem, into my davening, into my learning, into my midos, etc., first I have to see myself financially secure, and I'll get there. I have a plan. Within 7, 8 years, I'll have it all, have a clear vision of how I'm going to get there, and then I'll be able to dedicate the rest of my life to Avodas Hashem. So he calls them Balei Mashkoines, the people who demand collateral from Hashem, or to put it into our terms, people who demand cash up front before they do the job. That's the framing that he gives. So basically, what you're telling Hashem is, he puts it into very blunt terms. He says, basically, what you're telling Hashem is, Hashem, look, you want me to dedicate myself to your service? First, I need to see you. I need you to show me how I'm all set up. I need you to fill my bank account now till the end of my life. And then we can talk about me dedicating myself to your service. I can't let go until I see that in place. This is what he spends the sixth parak basically blasting in his piece by piece kind of way, kind of breaking it down and showing how, no, part of what Hashem expects of you is to be doing your shtadlis, but at the same time, letting go to the extent that you can properly engage yourself in his avodah and let him, so to speak, ridiculous to word this, use the word, pay as he deems appropriate. Okay, but as I said, we'll just kind of leave that in a little box, and I want to move on to the next perek, where he really ties up Shaar HaBitachon, which we've been busy with now for 2 years. I'm not sure, probably longer than that. To the seventh perek. And to an extent, he's going to really be kind of bringing all together everything we've been discussing. Given sheishlamnu, but what did you say? 404, is that what you said? Page 404 in the English. 406, I'm sorry.
464.
Oh boy, okay. 464. Numbers was never my strong point. A little better with words. Okay. Given sheishlamnu bashar hazeh. Since we've now completed in this shah, everything that we were able to discuss in terms of bitachon at our level, so sorry, so let's now discuss what works against bitachon. What works against living with that sense of security? I'm in Hashem's hands, and I am well taken care of. Va'imar ki mafsidei shloishes ha'sha'arim hakoydmim b'sefer hazeh, kula mafsidim. So first of all, let's refer back to the things that we've discussed that work against the earlier subject of this sefer. So let's just talk this out briefly. Let's just talk this out briefly. One, you can't come to bitachon in a vacuum. Living your life, And all of a sudden, you're facing some sort of situation, or not, whatever it is, and you're suddenly told, trust Hashem. Now, to put into words what might just be the experience is like, woman, I never really interacted with Hashem. I know that I'm going to meet him at 120, but I've never really seen him in my life, and I never really interacted with him, and how can I just feel secure letting go? So here the Chovas HaLevavos says, oh, okay, we've already identified the first problem. It's true. You can only let go and rely on Hashem after you already have ongoing experience with him. So here we have to start with Shara Bechina. So the Chovas HaLevavos says, that's right. That's really why, I've said a number of times, we've, Baruch Hashem, had this chus of going through, we didn't start with Shara Bitochen. We started with Shara Bechina, and Shara Avodas Tzadikim, and Shara Bitochen. It is popular to go to straight to Shara Bitochen, but you're to a large extent missing the full benefit of it because Bitochen is what's built up after you went through the Chovas HaLevavos' training of experiencing Hashem in your life and of having that basis of trust in a very solid way. And Shara Bitochen and Shara Bechina, the Chovas HaLevavos introduced us to a new idea, which once you've been through Shara Bechina, it's really been conditioned into your mind. You have a lot of experience with Hashem. You just never noticed. Hashem is busy with you in a very, very intensive way. And you're right. You do need to sense that in order to move on to Bitochen. So get to work. Sense it. So therefore, what's Bechina? We have to go back to that if we want to really round up Bitochen. Bechina means taking note, noticing. That's one translation we can give to Bechina. Noticing. If you want to take it to a little bit of a deeper level, we can call it contemplation. Both would be appropriate translations for the word Bechina. It starts with noticing. So start noticing how busy Hashem is with you. And take it to the next possible translation of Bechina, contemplation. Contemplate all the things that Hashem is busy doing with you. What's that? Oh, so an hour, Bechina in that sense means examination. To examine, right? We call a test and examination, but here it means for us to examine the things that Hashem is busy doing with us. So here he says, okay, so take a step back. Right? You ask the average person, and you know, we are now recapping things we've spent a lot of time on back in Mechina, but he's pulling it all in here. You ask the average person, how many problems do you have in your life right now? And how many great things do you have in your life right now? The average person will more easily list problems than particularly great things that are happening in life. And here the Chovas HaLevavos says is where the problem starts. Now, let's not do this in a way of look how terrible we are. On the contrary, this is how human nature works. And we are trying to now make ourselves into higher level humans, the superhumans, the true humans. So he tells us actually you're drowning in great things, just you never notice them for two reasons. Or for three reasons, right? Now we'll focus on the basic two. First of all, you were born into most of them. 80% of the amazing things that you have in your life are things that you were born into. And therefore, you never gave them a second thought. I am who I am. Now, how many good things happened to me? Now, who are you? Well, I'm a person with eyes, ears, a digestive system, a nervous system. Cardiovascular system, all these things, an immune system, all these things are part of who I am. Now the question is, what's next? So he says, wait, take a step back. Take a step back. You can see? Ooh, think about that a little bit. And as we've discussed, you have a person, Chalila, whose arm is in danger. I think a step further. His leg is in danger. Question is, are they going to have to amputate his leg, or will the doctors be able to save his leg? How much money would be reasonable for a person to try to put together in order to save his leg? How much money could it involve? You can get past $100,000 easily, but we get significantly higher than that, right? And would we say if a person is scrambling to try to put it together, come on, what's the big deal? No, we all understand that. It makes a lot of sense. A person wants to put together the $200,000 or whatever it is and travel around the world to see if he can save his leg. Okay. So now take a step back for a minute and say, you actually have a working leg. $200,000 off the cuff. You have another one. Two working legs. You have an awful lot at your disposal. Show you people who would pay all that money for what? Just to picture that. A person would pay $400,000 to be like you. Okay? That's number one. But legs, it doesn't begin and end with legs. How much would a person pay to save his sight? Etc. When you start talking about all these different things, so this is the demand that the Chovas HaLevavos puts on us in Shaar HaBechin, and he wants us to take that step back and say, yeah, go back to the drawing board. Start with everything. You have working lungs. You have working lungs. You have a working respiratory system. Rabbi Avigdor Miller used to keep a list of illnesses, a list of all kinds of different health failures. He would go through them to appreciate what his glasses are. Not on this table. Wait. Is it this? No, this is okay. To appreciate all the things. I know that this is a yid who puts a lot of energy into this year. So, okay. So therefore, you have to take a step back to be able to go back to the drawing board and start looking at each of these things and taking them personally and starting to experience, look quite what Hashem is giving me and how much he cares about me. The way I think of it is the following. Not everybody has many of the gifts we have, right? Not everybody has those working eyes. Many people have a faulty digestive system, a faulty respiratory system, kidney problems, which creates an ongoing, just one moment, which creates, an ongoing, just in terms of what you have to be doing on a regular basis, v'chule v'chule. Now, part of the idea is you want to be looking at these things to understand they're not givens. Therefore, to take it personally, Hashem decided he's going to give me. And don't think to yourself, well, that's pretty much the rule of how human beings emerge. No. Hashem gave a lot of gifts for the purpose of those who are going to notice it and say, oh, this is something that Hashem did for me personally. When he looked at me, he said, I'm going to give you this and this and this. Not only one working eye, you're going to get two. Question.
No. What is the baby that's born or the young child without working eyes supposed to be? Like Hashem looked at them and said, well, I'm not going to give that to you.
Oh, so here we come to the next obstacle to be talked to well, to Bechina. So let me round out the point, and we're going to get to the point that you made. So basically, the Chovas HaLevavos says that there are these two obstacles to sensing quite how drowning we are in Hashem's chasadim. A, the fact that we were born into them, and B, the fact that naturally we always have to be focused on what we don't have. Now, we're not saying this is like a point of a reprimand. We have to be, meaning every month you have to be busy worrying about where am I going to have money next month. Today you have to be busy thinking about what's for supper tomorrow. Where do I get the ingredients? But that, he says, distracts us from the things that we are getting on a regular basis. And this is a whole training system. This is a whole training system that when you really dedicate yourself to it, you actually learn to enjoy life more. You suddenly start learning. You don't need to be stimulated from all kinds of external things. A person who learns to appreciate, Avigdor Miller was a living example of this, who knew how to drink in a breath of fresh air, the way that he used to tell it, that's how he used to say, cocktails, cocktails, that's how he would say. To drink in a breath of fresh air, thinking about the whole recipe, we're talking those terms, of what air is. And what a breath of fresh air is, everybody probably told the story many times about his head in the sink,
Oh.
right? Okay, everybody knows that. about what a breath of what a cup of water is. Anybody who's heard three of his shiurim already heard about the apple, right? The whole apple routine, and went on and on. This is the person who's living a pampered life, right? So many different things to enjoy and to appreciate. In fact, the Kuzari says that that's one of the reasons why Chazal requires a very surprising statement. He says, Chazal required us to make brachas before the things we eat in order to enhance our enjoyment of the things we eat. And that the king responds, what's that supposed to mean? He says, yeah, because you just roll through things. You have to take a moment to stop for a moment and say, oh, there's something here. Let's enjoy it. Let's enjoy it. Picture being without, etc. So that already puts us into the ballpark, starts with appreciation. But the next step of it is that once you really start appreciating quite how much Hashem is busy caring for you, you can go on to the next step of bitachon. Without that premise, so say, up till now, I never met Hashem. And all of a sudden, I'm supposed to trust that He's going to take care of me. If you really learn to experience His care in a very, very real, solid, tangible kind of way, bitachon can follow. Now, you're raising the question, and this the Chavos Halevis lists as the third obstacle to bechinah. Like the first two are being born into the chasadim and the need and the focus on what we don't yet have. The third obstacle is the phenomena of suffering and pain, and this is basically what you'll bring up. The Chavos Halevis, sorry. The fact that we're constantly focused on what we don't have. What we don't have. What's the next thing I want? What's that?
Because that's a need.
Oh, so there's two levels to it. There's the justified level, and that is whether we like it or not, you know, we have to be taking care of things we don't have. But there's also the less justified level of it, and that is just the fact that once I have something, I quickly get used to it, and that will recedes into the back of my consciousness. And then it's what do I want next? Right? We spoke about this back then. My dump of an apartment. Oh boy, what's that? You think about what an apartment is, right? But why is it a dump of an apartment? The only reason it's a dump of an apartment is because there are nicer apartments out there. So, or, you know, my jalopy of a car. These are dangerous things to say. And the next obstacle, and here we're getting to your point, is that the Chavos Halevis and Shaar HaBechinah is trying to get us used to the idea that, to, not the idea, to the experience, to the sense that this world is full of chesed. You're just drowning in chesed. This was really what guided Avraham Avinu. What made Avraham Avinu? You know, we know two great things about Avraham Avinu, right? If we talk about his two primary midos, he was the one who spread Hashem's name. He's the one who discovered Hashem, right? He was the big emunah, forerunner and chesed. So these two different tracks, like two, these happen to be the two midos of Avraham Avinu. No, they come together. How did he get to chesed as a life agenda? It's because when he was busy studying the world, once he figured out that there must be a creator, his next question was, what does he want me to do? In order to figure that out, he said, what does he hold to be a value? What does the creator hold to be a value? How can I figure that out? He said, well, after studying the world around for enough time, he reached the conclusion that this creator's primary business, his primary occupation is chesed. That is what characterizes the world. And therefore, Avram said, apparently, and he never contacted me, he never gave me a Torah, he never told me what to do. All I can do is try to see what does he value and apply myself to that. That's why he turns chesed into his life's agenda. Because you're living in a world that's surrounded by chesed. So here we come to the question. The obvious question is, and this the Chavos Halevis says is obstacle number three, is that, yeah, the whole world is just characterized by chesed. There's an awful lot of pain and suffering in the world around. So that the Chavos Halevis says is obstacle number three. The phenomenon, and again, it's a legitimate obstacle. It's not legitimate to leave it as an obstacle. You have to tackle it. But the phenomenon of pain and suffering. And therefore, he says, you have to go to the next stage and learn how to appreciate the purposes of pain and suffering in order to be able to bring them too under the umbrella of Hashem's chesed. Now, that's not a simple subject. Later, he goes into Shavuot Sadikim, the whole subject of Tzadik V'Raloi, how to gain an appreciation of what that's about. But I'll just take a step back from that. The Chovos HaLevavos is putting us through a more complicated route as far as that goes. How do you fit pain and suffering into the picture of, or being surrounded by Chesed? But the Kuzari gives a little bit of a different formula, which is very profound. And he says as follows. Now, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but he says, I shouldn't say he says, I'm giving over what I got from him, from learning the Sefer, paraphrasing. If you really go through the exercises of Bechina and you learn to see quite how much chesed there is in Hashem's world, then the suffering is there, but it very, very much shrinks in proportion. And that is just true number-wise. When you really start getting into quite how much chesed is there, take the child who was born without eyes, chalila. Just take him. Forget about the people around him. How much chesed is there in his life? Because he does have all the other systems, right? And then putting it all together, right? Reb Sadia Goyen said that basically the world is a massive food factory. The world is a massive food factory. You think about it. You have the seas, the vast seas, right? And the sun is busy evaporating the surface of the sea, moving it up into the sky as clouds. Then you have the winds. All the mighty forces of nature are working together, what, to provide more and more food. What happens after the food? It's a major recycling plant. Earth is a major recycling plant. We don't want to think about this in too graphic terms, but that's the way it works, right? And once everything is used up, it moves back into the system to create more food, more resources. So basically, what the Guzari says is a very big difference. If you see somebody do something mean, this is the first time you're meeting this person, right? And you see them do something mean, something unkind, you're going to have a bad impression of the person, right? But let's say you know this person for 25 years, and this is a person who will do anything for anybody. Take his shirt off his back. Anybody, and you know that person on a daily basis, and you see how dedicated he is just doing for other people. And then one day, you see him say something unkind, do something unkind. It's a very, very different experience. So you're going to say, oh, wow, all these years I thought he was such a nice guy. No one's going to say that. It's not going to change your experience of what you know. It's going to be, that doesn't fit into the picture. I wonder what that was about. Even if you don't know the answer, it's a whole different kind of question. This is the perspective that the Kuzari gives on it. He says, basically, the idea is it's legitimate to ask, why should that person be suffering? If you're aware of all the chesed that Hashem did for you and for that person and for many other people. But basically, to just kind of like, the way I think of it is to be walking through life like this, the hand behind your back. And I'm focused ahead. I said, Hashem, just keep putting things in. Right? Keep putting things in. All of a sudden, I feel like 1 minute there isn't something here. I suddenly spin around and say, hey, Hashem, this is the first time you're in my life. You didn't give me something. Right? So when you are really experiencing, you can ask the question. It's a legitimate question. I want to understand. I want to understand. But to come and say, is Hashem kind or not kind? I don't understand. How could this be happening? 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. Have you been following the system? If not, it's a lack of derech eretz. Let's not talk frum. Let's not talk, religiousness, piousness. Some of us makes that point. It's an issue of derech eretz toward Hashem. Don't ignore everything he was up doing up till now, and all of a sudden here you wake up and say, I don't get it. See everything. I think I've said many times in the Kal V'Rebbe, right? Kal V'Rebbe. So it's so profound. He went through the Holocaust. He went through all the horrors of the Holocaust. Familiar with who he was. He was the Nifter a number of years back. The phenomenon of a Hasidic Rebbe without a beard, because the Nazis had torn it out. And he was a man who was full of, anybody's a little bit familiar, full of vibrance, full of he was known for his songs, right? He would come. His public addresses would often be songs, right? Full of vibrance, full of life, full of. And He was one of those people who immediately after the war in the DP camp started, okay, we have to infuse everybody with enthusiasm and we have to build. So somebody said to him, but how do you understand what happened? Look what happened to you. His response was exactly the point that we're making, but it was so powerful. He said, I don't understand it. But he said, you know what? Up until the war, he was apparently from a wealthy home. You know exactly. He said, I had so much. I don't understand why Hashem would do that either. So here's the issue. When we're getting good things, we never stop for a moment to say, one minute, why should I get that? The question first comes up when suddenly something goes wrong. Now here, you understand why we're saying this is not an issue of frum, it's a shiloh of derech eretz, okay? And that's something some of us drives home. You have to think of Hashem also in terms of being a mensch, not just in terms of being pious, but in terms of being a mensch toward Hashem. So here we say, one minute, if you're asking the question, wow, I wonder why Hashem did this, I wonder why he did that. Oh, now that I got used to the idea that he does so much chesed, I wonder why here there was a deviation. It's a very different question than a person who suddenly, the first time he mentions Hashem is, how could Hashem do X, Y, Z?
You have a child from the child's perspective who doesn't have 20, 30 years of experience of essence, who's born, let's say, into an abusive family or born with a serious health issue and on tubes and in pain. They're not expected to have bitachon. What is, I'm just wondering from that works for an adult who's. Or the caliber Rebbe, who had a great life, apparently a wealthy, nice life before he went into concentration camp. What if you're born into a pretty terrible life from the get-go?
Right. So let's try to address the question on two levels. First of all, I'll say, let's not allow that question to exempt us who are not in that situation.
Absolutely.
Right? That's number
100%.
one. Now, as for the child himself, so let's take another step back and say, nobody is expected to have this attitude that we're describing until they mature. Right? You have to reach a certain level of maturity, a certain level of life experience in order to be able to start approaching this whole subject. Now, let's take that child. It's actually very inspiring to read books written by people in those sorts of situations who, when they matured, now, of course, like everything else, it's going to depend on many factors, but there's no question that these people are not at all precluded. Sometimes these people can actually excel in, yes, being able to count their own blessings, and sometimes they can be the ones. It's mamish, it's ironic, but it's common. That sometimes these are the people who, of course, like everything, it's an issue of the right exposure, it's an issue of the right background, but can be the ones to turn around and show us, I'm going to show you how I can see all the blessing in my life. Now, don't you tell me about problems that you have, right? So nobody is out of this ballpark. Now, it's easy for me to say, I was born with two working eyes, Baruch Hashem, and other working things. But I keep stressing, we're discussing shiurim issues in this shiur, that we officially do that. We do the easy talking, right? Unapologetically, for the purpose of, let's do the talking when it's easy in order to be able to deal with it. But I'm coming back and saying that, yes, at the end of the day, if you actually follow the lives of some of these disadvantaged people, A, you'll find that they themselves can be just as great in this area because they themselves are capable of learning to count the blessings in their lives. And B, yes, here we do come to, even when we, if that's not the case, Chalila, we come to the other aspects of what might be the benefits that Hashem is trying to provide through putting a person through Tzaras Chalila. And here, the sky's the limit in terms of trying to conjecture. We can go back to the where he laid down a number of very solid understandings. But just to give one example of, well, this is a little theoretical. It really, we're not using this to explain this is how it works. We're using this to give an example of how, who knows. But the Chafetz Chaim used to give this mashal. The Chafetz Chaim was actually approached by parents who were born with a child without arms. They were distraught. And the Chafetz Chaim said to them, let me tell you the story of your child. He said this child in his previous life. Now, this is a Chafetz Chaim story. It's not a so presumably the Chafetz Chaim was not actually coming and saying, I know this to be the case. No, Chafetz Chaim, he was trying to say, I want to give you an illustration of how things can work. This child in his previous life was a Rasha. In what way? The Rasha of last week's parsha. Rasha lamotake esreyach. He hit people. That was his. He was a violent tempered person, and he beat up the people in his life. He beat up the people around him. But at the same time, he was a passionate person who did a lot of good, and he's an energy packed person with violent tendencies. He achieved great things. He tried, etc. But you didn't want to see what his wife and kids look like. Comes to Shamayim. Hashem says, look, you did great things, but you understand that we have something here that has to be addressed. So he's looking all fearfully and he's regretting every blow he gave. And Hashem says, you know what? Because you accomplished great things, I'm going to give you a chance to go back into Olam and go through what you need to go through there in order to rectify it. So the fellow says to Hashem, I'm pasha terrified because if I go and I fail again, then where does that leave me? So Hashem says, okay, so do you want to go straight to Ganon? No. So do you want the chance? Yeah, but I'm scared. Okay, so what's it going to be? He says to Hashem, well, can I make a following request? Maybe I can be born without arms. So Shemayim, they said, oh, no. You can't make that kind of request. Doesn't, you don't order that. So he says, look, I have a lot of zchusim. Please give me this chance to go there and not make the same mistakes. Fine. End up agreeing. I can actually give you that chance. You'll have the opportunity to be born without arms. Born into this world. Ah, and Neshama says, wow, I'm getting that opportunity. I'm going to be able to do that. He's born without arms. Again, we're not coming to say, whenever you see, now we know exactly what's going on, right? It's obviously not the idea. But this is just one example of how, yes, seeing suffering is an obstacle, is an obstacle. But we have to go to the next step of being able to say, okay, let me be able to see past this obstacle. So we started by saying it's by seeing the suffering in proportion to the overwhelming sea of chesed that really does characterize all of existence. Number two, we just gave one illustration, but there are so many other illustrations. Sometimes a person is put into a handicapped, inhibited situation. You know why? Because he's going to bring the people around him to their ultimate levels of greatness. This is also something that you often see. Ah, you say, so wait, why does this person have to suffer? So it goes on and on. This person, the Chavos makes this point back in Avodas Zedekim, when he comes to Shamayim, he will actually have the zchus of perfecting the people around him, which is an immense zchus. Chavos says that later, when the Linowitz used to hammer this home all the time, that as much as a person can achieve on their own, once they start affecting the people around them and influencing them, it goes manifold. This chus. So again, this is just another one other angle of the way these things might work. And the Derech Hashem says, Ramchal, this is not the Chavos. Ramchal says that when people are chosen for this purpose to go through suffering for the purpose of bettering of being mechaper for, et cetera, the people around them, he says that the way it works is that Hashem does it to the people who would be maskim if they were offered the opportunity. Hashem doesn't actually appear to the person and ask him, but it's those people who, were it presented to them in that kind of way, they would say, yes, I do want this opportunity. So, in other words, it's a big sugya. It's a sugya that we don't have to shy away from. We need to approach it right. and may actually be worth our while. I don't know, next week maybe to run through the Chovos HaLevavos there on that issue of where he first gives his disclaimer and says we never really know, but then he gives a number of very, very solid and profound approaches as to how to view it when you chalila see a righteous person suffering. I have some questions here. First question, I think we addressed, how do we deal with the suffering of someone else? The next question is, we're talking about physical suffering. What about mental, emotional illness or abuse, neglect? Okay, this is not something we can answer al regla achas, but we will say this. Again, from a place of easy to talk, but there are many, many packages of Yisurin. Each one holds its own opportunities, and Yisurin, as we know, are a means of achieving things at a higher level of profit than the standard life of doing Torah mitzvahs does. Yisurim up the stakes in a very great way. It comes in all kinds of different forms. It can come in the form of physical suffering. It can also come in the form of, like we're saying here, which these are actually more painful than physical suffering. Mental, emotional illness or abuse, neglect, these are more painful. And in the objective sense, they put people at a certain at a disadvantage in terms of what they can accomplish. But Shlomo Zalman Auerbach made a very powerful statement. He said that sometimes you want to go to a you want to get a really powerful bracha. You'd like to go to the top rebbe in the generation. It's hard to get in. It's hard to arrange it. Shlomo Zalman said, "You're looking for a very powerful bracha. Go to a person who's battling with emotional illness. That's the place to go to for brachas. Because these people are fighting things and working with challenges that demand of them levels of gvura, levels of godless that is not even going to be noticed on the outside. People aren't going to, they're not going to get applause for it." He says, but in terms of what's going on in their inner world, now, when you see this person, you might see a person who is, on an objectively speaking, lower level, coarse, unrefined because of the difficult background. But if we're coming back to the point that a person's true value, only Hashem can determine because it's about the inner battles and the inner building and the inner growth, these people can sometimes actually be the greatest people we know, even though we wouldn't know it. So that's again, this is our regel achas, and regel achas doesn't do the justice to the subject, but it does come back to the point that every circumstance in life is its own package, which offers its own opportunities for growth. And those of us who have shalva, those of us who weren't given, everyone gets a, some form or the other, different ways, different times, their packages. But then the idea is, so put yourself through it by intensifying your levels of your own avodah, right? It's your avodah samidus. Put yourself through Yisurim by really lowering your ego when it's tough to. It doesn't have to be a Yisurim that come from the outside. Because once you drive this home, point to home too much, people will come and say, so what about the people who don't have Yisurim? They're disadvantaged. How's that fair? Okay, when we get to that problem, it's actually a serious point that should be addressed. Okay, agut devoch.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Okay, when you said the story of the Kalava Rebbe, something didn't sit right because when somebody has